Hello, and welcome to another edition of Interviewing the Legends, brought to you by the Publicity Works Agency, devoted to promoting musicians and authors worldwide. Call us today at 941-877-1552 to start your free publicity evaluation. Remember, we shine only when we make you shine. Please welcome the host of Interviewing the Legends, music journalist, author, and entrepreneur, Ray Shasho.
Robert Barry has managed to survive in the treacherous minefield that is the music business and flourished as a performer, songwriter, and producer. It seems he's done it all. While he may be best known as the vocalist, bass player, and the ELP spinoff 3 with Keith Emerson and Carl Palmer, Barry's impressive list of credits include a stint fronting Ambrosia and long-running affiliations with Alliance, December People, and the Greg Kinn Band. Barry has released 5 solo albums, contributed to a number of high-profile tribute albums, and has an impressive track record in the studio. 2017 was noteworthy for some major efforts. Early in the years, Barry on bass and lead vocals joined with Terry Brock of Giant and Strange Ways on lead vocals, Gary Pill on from Boston, Sammy Hager and Alliance on guitar, and Matt Starr from the Ace Frehley band Mr. Big on drums to form All 41. They released the band's debut album, World's Best Hope. Simultaneously, he mounted a dedicated effort to complete his collaboration with Keith Emerson on the long-awaited 3 follow-up. That album, which took shape in 2016, was nearly shattered with the news of Keith Emerson's tragic death. Ultimately, and as a tribute to the friendship of Emerson and Barry, it somewhat painfully got back on track, and the rules have changed on Frontiers Music. SRL was released earlier this year. Please welcome multi-instrumentalist, vocalist, songwriter, and producer, Robert Barry, to Interviewing the Legends. Hello, Robert.
Hey, Ray, how are you?
I'm doing good. Thanks, man.
I don't know if it makes me seem like I can't keep a job or I've had an illustrious career. You lose all that stuff and go, I think I should have stuck with them. One thing I got to tell you, a cool thing that you didn't mention, I played with Sammy Hagar for about 3 years, right when Van Halen was kicking him out of the band.
Right.
And since I worked with Gary Peel, I'm from Boston, used to be Sammy's interpreter, and David Lauser, Sammy's drummer.
Right.
Sam said, why don't you just fill up the bass now? They don't want me to use Michael Anthony. Eddie's all mad. You know, and okay, I play with Sammy. Move up, what is that, 25 years? Sam calls us and put my band The Circle together. Ray, have you seen The Circle?
No, I have not. Band. No.
Okay. It's Michael Anthony, Jason Bonham, John Bonham's on the drums, and
wow.
Nick, Sammy's on time interpreter. They do the history of Sammy Hagar way back from Montrose to the solo of Sammy Hagar solo. They do a little Led Zeppelin because he ignored Sammy with that music. And then they do Van Halen. Well, when the Van Halen stuff comes on, it's me playing keyboards. I pre-recorded all the keyboards for Sammy. Jason puts on the headphones, and he hears the count-off. And by the way, I used his dad's voice for the count-off in the headphones.
Oh, cool.
So John Bonham is counting off Jason Bonham, and then they go into, like, right now, whatever the piano is.
Right.
And, it's, you know, nobody really cares about that, but it's just kind of fun for me to still be connected with Sammy, who's such a dynamo. You know?
So Sammy, have you been to one of his big parties?
Well, I used to play Cabo Wabo a lot with them and stuff, you know, in those days, and that was pretty wild stuff, I gotta say. It was, guys like, what's Matt's last name, the drummer from Guns N' Roses, he'd be drinking out of ladies' shoes, champagne out of their shoes and stuff. I'm like, whoa, dude, easy now. It was wild parties, let me tell you.
The Greg Kinn Band. Greg Kinn, he's from my hometown, Baltimore, as a matter of fact. They used to play him on WCAO, top 40 radio station there. What's up with the Greg Kinn Band? You know, Greg Kinn has had two huge top 40 hits, the breakup song and Jeopardy. And, you know, these guys have been around a long time. What's up with the band?
I got to tell you, we put out a new album last year. I'm a great bass player in the band, but right. I'm the producer and his songwriting partner for the rest of it. And what happened to Greg after having those big hits is FM radio here, our big station K-Pops in Silicon Valley, when I'm talking to you, Pop, put him on a morning show. And Greg has a memory like a gopher trap. He remembers everything. And he opened for the Stones. He toured with the Who. He's done everything. So his morning show was really the top show. It's bigger than any show we've ever had. 18 years, the guy got up at 4:30 in the morning, drove an hour and a half to K-Fox, did that show. It sort of ruined his music career. As successful as he was as a personality,
right?
We played 3 gigs a year. You know, we had the Kinn Cert, where we'd have headliners like Yes or...
Yep.
Heart or something, and we'd open, and Greg would announce it was his show, kind of. But that was it. So the radio show ends, and we say, you know, we need to do the album. So we started working on it. It took a couple of years to do, and last year it came out, and it was really critically acclaimed by Greg Kinn fan people. If people like simple rock and roll with a message and, you know, kind of rocking stuff, it's a really good album.
Great band. Great band.
He's a great guy, too. We have a lot of fun. He's just a sweet guy. He's funny. He's always on, super creative, and we kind of share that. That's why I've done so much in my career, even though I'm the best guy you never heard of. the most popular guy you've never heard of, whatever you want to call it. I've been so lucky, but I'm sort of prolific with ideas and things, and it's kept me working with all these people because I always have something to offer, and Greg's the same way.
Yeah. Hey, there's nothing wrong with that, man. You know, playing with other people all the time, you know, it never gets boring, and you learn a lot, you know?
Yeah, and, you know, I'm a good partner.
Yeah.
You know, I can say, here's what I would do, and I can put it out exactly what I believe and how I feel, give them 110% of my creativity, and if they say, I don't like it, okay, what do you want to do?
Yeah.
I'm good at compromise, moving on, but they can always count on me for having ideas. And a lot of the guys, you know, after they've had quite a few years in the business, like Steve Howe, back when I was working with him at GTR, the guitar player from Yes. Even Keith and Carl, Greg Lake kind of dried up, and they wanted something new. That's why we got to get together with the band 3 in 1987. Because Greg Lake had nothing at that point to offer, material-wise. And it's, you know, I made a career out of having ideas. Maybe not always good ideas, but ideas.
I was very fortunate to interview all the guys from ELP, and I had a wonderful conversation with Keith. If you look at Wikipedia, the story about him and the piano, the flying piano, that's in there.
Yeah.
The conversation we did together. But he's like you said. I heard you on interviews. He's just such a nice. He was such a nice guy. You know, I was shocked when it happened.
Yeah, accessible, funny. Easygoing, except for he was a bear when it came to his piece of the music. He
right.
was on it, you know? Just an amazing performer and writer and player.
Yeah, when I talked to him, he just did they were doing the 70th birthday tribute concert with the South Shore Symphony Orchestra. And I think that was at Madison Theater or something like that in Long Island. They were doing a big tribute to him, which was, he was really excited about that.
But like, he was moving more toward being a composer. You know, people playing the music he had done before. He had some trouble with his right arm, and a couple of his fingers were numb, and
right.
He wasn't as comfortable playing as much. But that said, when we started working together again on this new album, he was on it, and you know, maybe he had a little pain in that arm, but he was playing some great stuff, making up some, you're writing great stuff. Happy that we had a record contract with a big record company with a good advance. In fact, he said to me, he goes, how'd you get me that advance? Who has that kind of money anymore?
Mm-hmm.
I said, well, these guys want this album. They want a second 3 album.
Yeah.
He goes, I thought with anymore. I said, no. I said, you're Keith Emerson. You're one of a kind. Not enough, you know?
Right.
And we started working, and because I'm also a keyboard player and worked with him so much in 87, 88, and then throughout the years on different projects, I sort of knew how to challenge him in his own language. You know, he's working with guitar players, bass players, drummers and stuff. That's one thing. But you can actually play. Well, I'll show you. I'm at my studio. I told you I like to talk to people here from the control room.
Okay.
And I have a state-of-the-art Pro Tools studio with the latest of everything and the oldest of everything.
Huh.
I have a Moog synthesizer, all the stuff the Keith has. I have a calfskin drum set. That's what they used to make the heads of a cowhide and a drum set.
Yep.
I mean, I have everything because I used to do sound alikes. I still do a few here and there. I did it for Miramax and Paramount Films, where it would sound like the visual guy, but it wasn't. In fact, the TV show Cold Case would use a lot of that kind of stuff where it sounded like. So I have 130 guitars. I'm not blagging. I'm just trying to say my tools, you know. I mean, a real concert grand Yamaha C7 piano, and I have all the digital pianos and keyboards. The oldest, I have 2-inch tape. I have everything. So I'm sitting right now talking to you in front of my Pro Tools screen, which is this huge screen, and he could call, or I call him and say, what do you want to work on? He'd say, well, I have this idea. And he'd go, so there's a piano right in front of me, in front of my Pro Tools.
Okay.
And usually I use it for singers and say, oh, you know what? That note's a little flat there. And I say, that's what I use it for. But with Keith, he'd call me, he'd play something like, I said, oh, okay, that sounds really cool, but let me figure it out. And I go, really slow, and they go, oh, you know, you had a mistake, and then there's not that, and he sort of gave me a lesson in what he had just played for me. I say, okay, then I play it medium speed, like that. You go, yeah, that's it, but it's faster than that. I know. So I'd record it on the Pro Tools at my tempo, and he'd say, well, that needs to go like right before the verse, you know, a song. Okay, cool, I love that. We'd hang up the phone, and while I was inspired, I'd work on it a bit and try to get up to speed. So I have the slow one with all the right notes, and I have the fast one I try to do at his tempo with maybe not all the right notes, but it would be more rendered the way he felt it. And we'd made songs out of this stuff. It was my job to write the lyrics, and you know, the verses and chorus, kind of, and he was the music guy. And we put these things together, and we had 5 tunes done before he died. And, I mean, not completely recorded, but written. And the continuity in the songs and the genius Emerson stuff, it was all there. It had his style and his sound, you know, and it was such a cool working relationship. But there was no time constraints. It was after my session, after he was done, what are we doing during the day? Nobody was usually around his house. He liked to sit back with a glass of wine, listen to music.
Right.
We'd sit there with no constraints. Maybe if we wanted to talk 2 minutes, say, no, I'm just not feeling it tonight. Okay, I'll talk to you tomorrow maybe. Oh, maybe next week. We would do it when we wanted to, so it was very creative and very free. And, of course, we'd talk about family and everything else during the time, you know. It wasn't like there was studio time built. They were going to be there for 6 hours. You got to make the most of it.
Yeah.
It was really a great way to work. And these days, with communications the way they are, totally different than the way it was 30 years ago.
How'd you get the finished product to sound so good? I mean, did he send you anything, or did you just record everything off the phone?
You know, he sent me a bunch of digital files.
Right.
I have one song we did back in 1987 we didn't use on the first album because I thought it was too straight rock. I mean, I brought the straight rock to it. I'm the AOR guy that brings in the melody and the choruses, especially
right.
with the progressive thing. But he brought that out. Well, that's kind of straight rock, Keith. I don't know. What are we going to do with that, you know? I'm waiting for the Emerson stuff. And it was kind of funny. He goes, oh, okay. We never used it, but now I heard it. I'm like, oh, no, that's fantastic. We got to do some of that. And, you know, the digital files, he would send me the real keyboard parts on them. This sounded stupendous. I only had like 20-30% of his playing on it, though, before he died.
Yeah.
And at that point, I wasn't going to finish it. I thought, oh, my God, we have 5 songs. Had another one I had written I wanted to send him called This Letter that was kind of about inspired by him wanting to see his grandkids, about my family. And I never got to even play it for him. It was 2 days. I finished it before, and
that's
I was going to send it off. And
yeah.
We're gone.
That's a shame.
Yeah.
Well, unlike some of the other guys that interviewed you that never listened to the music, I review albums all the time. I gave this one a 5-star rating. It was a great album. My favorite track. Let's see if you're surprised or not. Our Bond.
No, you know, I'm not surprised. And, of course, you know, I wrote that after Keith had died.
Really?
I was looking at Facebook, and I saw all these people. Like you had said, he was such a nice guy,
right,
and accessible. And they were not only honoring him and missing him as the music, which I thought I'd see a lot of that, but they were missing him as a human being, even if they had never talked to him.
Mm-hmm.
They knew this was a good man, you know? And he was so dedicated to his art, just as a human being. And I was really inspired by that. And even though I felt I couldn't finish the album, I thought, you know, I'm going to write this song. Because Keith bonded together this fan base that is so dedicated. It was through his music, but it was also bonded by his personality. And I was going to try to explain that in the song and also quote a bunch of things from the songs of the album that we did together with the first three albums, and then a bunch of things ELP did, like Fanfare and O'Down and Tarkus, and little quotes in there. And it just kind of fell together. It could have been a very tough thing to weave all those parts in and make it a tune, but if you get it, like you did, obviously, and you see what it's all about,
mm-hmm,
it kind of flows seamlessly. Now, I've had someone tell me, goes, I love the album, but that Art Bond is so disjointed. What is that all about? And, of course, that guy didn't have a history of ELP music.
Yeah.
But if he did, he'd be going, that's really cool the way you put that stuff.
It is
like,
cool.
On My Way Home from the 3 album, or why, the way it ends with a little hint of Fanfare, the very last thing on One Note, you know.
What language were you speaking there?
What language?
Yeah.
Spanish.
Oh, Spanish. It was Spanish. Okay.
Yeah, we had Spanish on the first 3 albums.
Right.
I was living in Spain.
Okay,
and,
makes sense.
He spoke Spanish, so I had him help me with some lyrics on that, because
right,
Carl was really a lyric writer, and he translated to Spanish, so I have no idea if it really makes sense or not. Who knows what I'm saying?
I don't know. The song was almost, it was epic. It was kind of like it belonged in Game of Thrones, you know?
And you know, the version I put out on Facebook,
uh-huh,
I called it the Emerson Army.
The Emerson Army.
And I put out one verse at a time in the lyrics. And I, Emerson Army by the Emerson Army 3, I put out a video, all piece history, with that song.
Yep.
And people really took to it. I wasn't selling it. It wasn't an album I was out. It's just giving it to the people to, you know, to enjoy and see if they felt that I summed up the bond that we all had with Keith. And it seemed like they got it. You know, they really did.
Well, you got a lot of great reviews on YouTube. You know, a lot of people, you know, they said that they went back into their youth, you know, because it was like the early days of ELP, and they loved it.
Yeah, I was very fortunate with that. It kind of was the launching ground for the 3.2 album to
right,
come out. So people wanted to know what it was all about because they had heard that song on Facebook and YouTube to start with. And once the album came out, it just exploded. Amazon sold out the first day in 5 countries by noon.
Awesome.
I'm like, what? Really?
Yeah.
But I was getting notices from friends who thought they waited to the last minute. Hey, I got to order it. I can't get it. It sold out. I said, what? And they were mad. Right? So it wasn't a good thing on that day. And then, unfortunately, Frontiers took about 6 weeks to get to restock it, because they sold out everything.
Wow.
And fortunately, they sold out, I guess, but unfortunately, a lot of people couldn't get it and were a little upset about it because it was hot off the presses, kind of. They wanted to, it's a 20-page booklet that explains a lot of things,
yep,
and they wanted to see that. You know?
Yeah. Well, a lot of great tracks on there. You know, Somebody's Watching, ELP All the Way on that track. This letter was kind of a fooler because it starts out as an acoustic intro, you
that's
know,
right,
and then it changes. The mood changes dramatically later on in the song.
And that was the song that I wrote 2 days before Keith died.
Right.
And, you know, I'll tell you why I wrote that song. But 10 years before, his son Aaron had said, Dad, you're going to be a grandfather. We're having a baby. Mm-hmm. And Keith called me and said, oh, Aaron's going to have a kid. I said, oh, Keith, I hope I live long enough to have grandkids. How cool for you? He goes, oh, I don't know. I don't feel good about grandpa. he was thinking that made him seem old.
Right.
You're the grandfather. And move up 10 years so I work on the album. And all he wanted to do, he had a certain timeline. I got to go see those grandkids. Wow. So I love them so much.
Yeah.
He was so involved and embedded in their lives.
Awesome.
But before we could finish the album, he needed to go back to England and see him. And I thought, how cool is that? That he was worried about it, and now it's the most important thing in his life. So I wrote this letter about, you know, everybody writes love songs. Oh, I love you so much. I love, love, love. Everybody tries to say it.
Right.
You can't really explain, you know, if it's the love of your parents, of your wife, of your girlfriend, of your kids, whatever. It's so much deeper than words can really explain. So this letter came out of that. And my thing was, okay, Keith, this is going to be kind of a Celtic, little acoustic thing. And Keith had worked on some Celtic albums for a band called Tempest with me. And then what I'd like you to try to do at the end, I want you to try to explain how you can't really explain how deep love is
mm-hmm.
when you really love somebody and throw the kitchen sink in.
Right.
Make this as wild and as crazy, every Emerson ragtime piano, Mozart, the whole thing. Just shove it all in there because that's what love is. It's just all encompassing. And that's what I was going to explain to him when I sent it to him, why it started acoustic so simple. And, but it needed to burst open, you know. I never got the chance to play that before.
Well, it's a great song. Yeah, you did a wonderful job on that. Your vocals are awesome. One by One, I guess, is kind of like the song on the album. It's you know, got that beautiful classical piano intro.
Yeah.
You know, it's also an epic track as well. And,
I think that kind of has a bit of everything on the whole album.
Right, right.
That's why I chose it to be first. I thought it represented Keith at his best, writing-wise, style-wise, and what I like to do, again, it has that chorus. The part that I bring to Progressive Rock is the AOR part, where you could actually sing the chorus back, but just not this ethereal, rambling on, playing a bunch of notes kind of stuff. You know?
Right. Well, it's an awesome album. Everybody needs to buy it. Hopefully it's still available on Amazon.
I heard from Australia today. A guy sent me a Facebook Messenger, which is maybe the best thing ever created and the worst, because everybody can get a hold of you, you know? And he said, hey, I got my copy yesterday from Amazon Australia. I guess every country on Amazon has a back. I figured there was one Amazon
right.
in the U.S., but
yeah.
No, every country has their own.
Yeah.
So, and what I always tell people, if there's a mom-pa record store, you know, some little guy, it could be a young guy or guy, that loves vinyl so much and the CD, and because it has booklet, has art with it, and he has all of those stores. They had this album when it first mm-hmm. came out. They all had a couple of copies to see, like they knew that it was going to be important. And they sold out right away, but they might have it again. So go there first. Try to support your local tiny little record store. Those guys love music. It's like radio.
Right.
You know?
Right.
The editor doing it, they love it.
Well, that wasn't the only album I listened to, and since it is Christmas coming up, the December people are brilliant, man. I just fell in love with all the songs. Oh my God, you know.
I gotta tell you, I think December people could be really big, but I can't find the right manager.
It should be big.
To open those doors.
It doesn't make sense. It should be tremendous.
Yeah. Again. For people that don't know, December People takes a classic rock, famous song, like Stairway to Heaven, and we take a classic Christmas holiday song, like Night Before Christmas, and we mash them up, and Stairway to Heaven becomes Night Before Christmas, or take Angels We've Heard on High becomes Journey's Don't Stop Believing. But it fits like a glove.
It does.
And it's exactly, I mean, you think it could have been on the Journey album. And people go, how do you do that? You take Billy Idol's White Wedding, and we put White Christmas into it, and it fits like a glove. It's not only like cool holiday music, but you get the joke. You know, you're sitting there, and you're going, oh, there's that thing by The Who. I hear some of Bob O'Reilly right there.
Right.
Who are you? You know, you hear all these little hints in there, especially when they see it live. It is such a fun thing to do. But I can't find a manager that can open those doors. I've had two of them. They've just about ruined us by not making any headway.
Right.
I guess I haven't been able to land that guy. But when I find the right guy or woman that says, oh my God, this could be as big as Trans-Siberian, because with Trans-Siberian, you can't remember their songs.
That's right.
You remember the fire, the smoke bombs, the lasers. Well, the Simba people can do the smoke bombs and the lasers and the fire, no problem. But you're going to not only remember what we have, you're going to want to have the album at home, because it's sort of funny to hear these. Oh, it's another one, Silent Night, like Tears for Fears, and it sounds like it really could be the original song. It just, it's really, or you take, this is kind of a funny one, but take Jingle Bells, and we do it like Hot for Teacher Van Halen, with all the eruption guitar intro, and it fits like a glove. It's not like you sort of, oh, they're doing that song like this song. You go, oh my God, that could have been the original song.
Yep.
So when we find the right guy, Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, like AC/DC's Thunderstruck, Rudolph, Rudolph, you know, it's really funny.
By the way, nice ears on Jingle Bells.
Yeah. And you know, what I like about the concept is that it can go on forever.
Yeah.
Every 10 years, classic rock comes up another decade. And, you know, we don't have anything, we don't have any Pearl Jam, December People songs yet, but then we had one by Fun, we had Green Day. I mean, you know, it's so easy when there's a good hit song, for me anyway, because it's part of what I do, to make them into the holiday song, or make the holiday song into that.
You know, you kind of got sometimes you have a Lou Gramm voice, so you need to do a Foreigner takeoff, you know?
Yeah, you know, I've tried, I have a few that I haven't been able to make magical.
Right.
There's five albums out, and every song on those albums is, like I say, fits like a glove, like Winter Wonderland, like D.B. Lewis's, not Wonder, we do one new drug part of it too, but Working for a Living. You know, there's so many things. All I Want for Christmas is my two front teeth, like George Thurgood's Bad to the Bone. It's so funny, but it sounds perfect. And I haven't come up with a Foreigner thing, and Lou Gramm is one of my favorite singers, by the way, so I appreciate you saying that. I haven't been able to come up with Stones that's good enough.
Right, right.
I tried Brown Sugar, I tried the Sympathy for the Devil, you know, all that stuff. I just haven't made one that's quite as good as Frosty the Snowman, like Benny and the Jets on John, which is really funny again. Or Deck the Halls, done like Rush.
Right.
There's three Rush tunes put together to Deck the Halls. Here's a crowd that likes holiday music and might do fine with Journey or Foreigner, but when we get them with the Rush, they stand up and applaud.
Yeah, they always do.
They don't even know Rush that well. They probably don't even like Rush,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
It's because Rush is a little edgy for your average Christmas song listener. Silver Bells, like Tom Petty's Runner on a Dream. It's so much fun.
Well, my turn to boast about it. You've got, okay, boys and girls, you got Silent Night. John Wetton sings this, right?
Yeah, that's on the first album. That's right.
Yep.
That's way back there, the very first one.
And it's Pink Floyd, Us and Them, with Silent Night.
Yeah.
Now, how cool was that?
You know, and Steve Walsh actually sings on that album, too.
We Three Kings.
Yeah, he did a few of them, and that was the start of it. I'll tell you, Magna Carta is a record company
right.
that I did a lot of work for. A lot of tribute albums to Death Backs, like Yes, ELP, Genesis, Jethro Tull. They called me up and they said, we want you to do a Christmas album. You've had really great success with our company, and we think it'd be great if you had a Christmas album. And I said, I don't want to do a Christmas album. I said, why not? Everybody sings Christmas songs. It's like, there's nothing special in it. I want to be creative. And they said, I tell you what, you've done a lot with our company, and you've had great success. You figure out how you will do a Christmas album. And they hung up the phone. I went, what? So I sat down, and I thought, what would be... And they said traditional Christmas songs. I can't write my own. You know, a lot of the Simba People albums have one original song I've written on there, too.
Yeah.
But no, they wanted Silent Night. And I'm trying to think what I did first. I sent them, I think I did The Night Before Christmas first.
Right.
Along with The Who.
Yeah.
I thought, well, I'm just going to try to put a couple together. And I thought, well, if I do these, you know, big hit songs, I want to do something everybody's going to know, but then again, it'll be so different. And they loved it. They said, this is genius. You got to finish it up.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it was April, May, getting to be hot here in California, and I got to do a Christmas album.
Yeah, I know the feeling.
Inspiration wasn't there. We don't get snow anyway, but I'm like, oh boy. So I said, yeah, yes, one of my favorite bands. I had to do Care of the Bells. Like, yes, it's yes, turns out. And it just started, you know, it was just something I could do. It just felt natural to me to put these songs together like that. And that one album of the year in the independent record label convention that year, which I was surprised about, even though they entered it.
How cool was this? Santa Claus is Coming to Town, LaGrange, ZZ Top, and the ho, 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 ho. It just goes, you know?
it really does. It's like the songs, what I like to say. Then you get it. I can tell you really get it.
It's incredible. I love it.
And you should see the audience live. I mean, it's one thing you put it on at the home and someone visits and it starts dancing. Oh, they're in the back of my hand. They got playing ZZ Top. That's cool. Then it goes, ho, ho, ho. You know, you see people kind of look like, what? You better watch out. You better not cry. Ho, ho. You know, and they light up because they get the joke. You know, they really do.
But it's a cool way to listen to Christmas music instead of the old traditional way, because, you know, anybody that likes, you know, rock and roll or classic rock, you know, and loves Christmas, I mean, it's a no-brainer.
You know what else? It is the actual classic Christmas song, too, or holiday song.
Right.
I don't change the melodies. Once in a while, you might have to change a chord to match the style of the band, but the chord that I change it to still works with the same melody. So you can sing Jingle Bells as we're playing Hot for Teacher, or you can sing Oh Come All You Faithful like Rosanna, Toto.
Right.
You know,
right.
You can still sing it. We do good King Wenceslas like Dire Straits, Money for Nothing.
Mm-hmm.
It's really funny. But you can sing. If you know Good King, you can sing it.
How about the first Noel with John Wetton with King Crimson?
Yes, and of course he was one of the original guys, you know.
Yeah.
And, yeah, that's all on Sounds Like Christmas, the very first album. That's the one that launched the whole brand.
Yeah. You got Sounds Like Christmas, Rattle and Humbug, DP3, Classic Rock Christmas, and the last one was Saint Nick's Picks, right?
That's right. Saint Nick's Picks is sort of a fan favorite.
Right.
And a couple of others put on there. People, you know, when we play, so many, they buy CDs. You know, people say, oh, CD's dead. No, CD's not dead. People want to have the artwork. They want to have the cover. And if you're playing live, they want something for you to sign. You
right.
can't sign it downloading your phone unless you want writing all over your phone.
Yeah.
We really do quite a bit of CD sales in person because we have them online and stuff, too. But and people, we go out right after the show. We do it for charity. And we sign everything.
Well, it's an amazing collection of Christmas songs with classic rock. If I can help in any way promote this and get the word out to the right people, I'll do my best because it, like you said, it deserves to be out there. It should be a standard every year, you know.
Well, that's what I thought, and that's why I'm so surprised that with the two managers I've tried, they haven't been real big time managers, but I thought that they had enough clout to open some doors with the right agency to book it, and they didn't. And it's funny, in this business, it's still who you know.
Yeah.
And if you know them and you say, you know, you have a good manager and they say, look, this band's really good. I'm on it. I'm managing them. Our career's going to blossom.
Right.
We need the right agency to book it. And the whole team together sort of believes in each other. Then they call on the favors to say, you have to book this.
Right.
And, you know, they call the venues and stuff. And I haven't found the guy or girl, woman, that will take a chance and do that.
Amazing. So, amazing. Yeah, they're too busy with Taylor Swift, that's why.
Well, yeah, and she's great, you know. But, yeah, and you're kind of right, because Taylor Swift can tour and make money all year long. December people have November and December to do it. But if you look at what Trans-Siberian does, they charge $500,000 a show.
Yeah.
And they play, you know, two different Trans-Siberians. They play all November and all December. That'll be minus Christmas and Thanksgiving. So they're playing 45 shows, 50 shows, right. Maybe. That's a lot of money.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not about the money for us. We do it for charity.
Right, you know, right.
We have a little different slant on it. We want to go into a city or a town and be that city or town yearly give back event. Hey, like we just did Campbell here. 100% of the ticket sales go to the homeless advocates here in Campbell called the Downtown Streets Team.
Wow.
They get homeless people jobs. They don't just give them food and out and a sleeping bag and sit on the street. They work to get them jobs, any kind of job. They say a dignity through work is what their motto is. And that's a good way to give people a foundation to build their life on.
Sure.
And so we do it for them. And we do guitars and guns in Monterey here, which is a little bit away from town, but they take at-risk youth and they get them guitar lessons in a group. They get them a guitar. They give them something to focus on and hopefully a love of music and playing around with guitars with your friends and stuff and getting together. It's kind of like church or an AA meeting. You know, people get together and they keep doing it.
Right.
And it makes the camaraderie and saves some of these kids from joining gangs or just maybe drugs or. So that's what we're all about. We want to be the city or town's give back event, but we want it to affect just that local area. So we're all into United Way and UNICEF, all the things go around the world, but that's not what we do.
Right, right.
We want each area to help their own people.
Yep.
And we think we could sort of stamp out hunger anyway that way if every town would really step up.
Yeah.
Not that hard to do. Anyway, that's what we try to do. And again, looking for that manager that has the key to the door.
Well, you did a couple of shows. You December 7th and 8th, right, at the Firehouse Arts Center?
Those are the last shows of this year. Yeah, we did a few other ones around California.
Right.
In November and December before that. Those are the last ones. Yeah, we're done for this year now. Yeah.
But, you know, you guys should have been out there, like you said, like... you know, Mannheim does a lot of shows now. You know, you guys should be out there constantly touring for
I'm
Christmas.
I'm surprised, too, because I've seen Mannheim, and they're really sleepy, and it's very old-fashioned.
Right.
And they still sell out these pretty big places.
They do.
And I'm thinking, the generation that likes them is still a rock and roll generation. They would love us.
Yeah.
But they're getting the right people, like I said.
That's right.
And I guess I haven't got there, so I'm still working on it. And I can't tell you how much I appreciate your support on it, though, your enthusiasm, because sometimes, you know, I'm the guy that, well, I'm with 3-2. I mean, I wrote the song with Keith. I have the studio. I produced it. I played. I mean, there's a lot of time and a lot of work. It took me a year to do that.
Right.
December is the same thing. I not only have to write those mashups and make them work, I got to record them, mix them, you know, get artwork, all the things that go into it. That's all I want to do. I'm the creative, the music guy.
Right,
you know?
Right.
And sometimes I just say, it's just too much work for me to keep doing this part. Because trying to book it and do the manager duties, you run into a lot of business things that aren't fun for a creative type person. They're negotiating the contract with the venues, getting the charities to step up and do what they're supposed to do. All these things kind of work against my personality of trying to be part of a act that does things for charity, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Everybody should step up, and I find they don't. And I wind up having to ride shotgun on all these people and say, hey, come on, man, we've got to get the newspaper, get going, get this, we need the radio. I'm doing the music. I got the band. I got this great band, you know? And I need to find the right person.
I tell you, Robert, you're not the only one. A lot of guys I talk to, their wives are their managers now. Because, you know.
Well,
They have no choice, you know.
Well, yeah, some of them, like Dave Menichetti from YNT, is a friend of mine. His wife, Jill.
Right.
Put them back on the map. She's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Just amazing. Of course, and Ozzy had his wife a long time ago start managing. Of course, her dad was an agent, so she knew what she was doing. But, there's a lot of that going on.
When I arrange these interviews, a lot of times I'm talking to their wives, you know, like Steve Hackett, Joe Hackett, Joe does, you know, Roger McGuinn, his wife, you know, it goes on and on. Yeah.
Yeah. And they have to have a special talent. I actually think that's probably their second or third wife. I mean, the talent that's in the business.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
That kind of understands it, because you just can't come out of the blue and be a manager. These girls are good.
They are good.
They do. I mean, Steve Hackett's wife, oh my God, look what's going on with him. He is doing so well. I'm so happy for him.
He's a good guy, too. I like Steve. He's been on the show.
Yeah, very cool.
Now, your band, December People, it's David Med, right?
David Med plays keyboards for the Tubes, yes.
Yeah, I've had Fee Waybill and Prairie Prince on the show, so I'm very familiar with the Tubes. Then Gary's the guitar player who was in Boston.
Gary Peel, yep. Plays with the band Boston, been with them 30 years.
Yep.
Yeah.
Jack Foster.
Jack's a solo artist I produce here at the studio. We have the Jack Foster band and something called Jazz Raptor, which has CDs out in Europe and Japan, that progressive stuff. He's a great guitar player, a great singer. He sort of rounded out the December People. I call him my utility guy. He can do anything.
And David, right? David Lauzer?
David Lauzer, Sammy Hagar's drummer, yep. Longtime drummer, yeah.
Wow, it's a great lineup.
He's an amazing drummer. He's just like having Keith Moon in the band from The Who. You know, he's like so energetic, and he's fun to watch, and he just brings it all alive, yeah.
Now, are these the guys that you travel with as well when you do gigs?
Yes, oh yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, those guys are in the band. That's the live band. Yep.
It's a great lineup, man.
Yeah, it's really a good band. That's why it's disappointing that I can't find that person that will put her on the map. You know, like,
yeah.
We've been doing it 9 years. The hard thing is, when you get a manager, okay, the first year, okay, well, yeah, I want to do this. So
right.
There's a few gigs, and you figure the next year they'll really ramp up because they're just getting to know everything. So you get past the first year, then we get in the second year. If something doesn't happen, we're waiting for the end of the year for more to happen, then not enough happens. So you lose the whole next year, too, because now you have to fire the guy.
Yeah.
You know, and because it's only November, December playing, everything you try takes 3 years.
Yeah.
And that's happened twice now, so it took a long time to, you know, I'm not going to make the same mistake again. I'm going to find somebody that really can open those doors.
Right.
And we'll see. I don't know how I'm going to do that, but I'm going to do it.
Well, if I can help, I'll do it, and then I'll let you know about it, and then we'll see. I'll do it on the sly.
Well, I mean, I can't thank you enough for even just saying that you care enough about it. I think December People can go out. We can compete with Trans-Siberian, but we don't need to. I think we can take the little more personal way with Mannheim Steamroller, like the 2,500 to 5,000 seat places.
Right.
And put a new spin on the holiday show that, like I said, it can go on forever. I even have a female version that I want to put out if I can get it on the map.
Right.
Which sounds like Joan Jett's I Love Rock and Roll.
Oh, my God. How cool is that?
Deck the Halls. It fits perfect. I mean, you can't believe how these things fit. So.
You know, once you're on, do a couple of shows and you get good reviews, that's all it takes. You know, then you're in.
Yeah, you know, that happens here in California every
right.
show. But we don't have a show high profile enough. Like, I try to get us on the Ellen show.
Right.
I have a special guitar, a December People guitar guy made. It's a $10,000 guitar. It's amazing. Wonderful guitar. And I want to give it away on the Ellen show or Jimmy Fallon, one of the big TV shows, for charity. Let them auction it off.
Sure.
And, of course, that gives us our shot of getting the big exposure, too. Because once people hear it, like you didn't hear it before, now you're going,
exactly.
This is a really cool thing, right?
Exactly.
So you got exposed to it, and you go, hey, why isn't this going all over the country, and why don't people know about it?
Right.
I just know that something will happen if I can get on that TV show and do that auction.
I think you're right.
A lot of gig with that guitar.
I think you're right.
I'd love to keep it. It's a beautiful guitar. It has Santa and a sled all airbrushed. I mean, the whole picture wraps around the side of the guitar and onto the back. It's not like a decal. This is hand airbrushed.
Wow.
By an artist. It's just an amazing piece of work. Built by a great guitar builder here.
Right.
That, you know, it just couldn't be a nicer piece of work.
Huh. Well, I'll use my connections and try to help you guys out because you deserve it.
That's great, man.
Yeah. Robert, here's a question I ask everybody. if you had a Field of Dreams wish, like the movie, to perform or collaborate with anyone from the past or present, who would that be?
You know, the people I really, there's a couple of them that are gone, and a couple of them are here. For a bass player, it'd be Chris Squire, mm-hmm. from Yes, who's gone.
Yeah.
Or Paul McCartney, who is still here. They both have the same style to me.
Right.
They play notes that aren't the root notes in the bass, and they make the bass more musical than any bass player I've ever heard before. Guitar players, I love Jeff Beck.
Mm-hmm.
They're number one, Jeff Beck. I think Jeff Beck doesn't even know how to play guitar. He just is the guitar. You know, it just blows me away what he does and how he sounds. And the soul that it comes out of his fingers is amazing.
Yeah.
There's a few keyboard players, but mm-hmm. of course, I did get to do my last work with Keith Emerson. He was my favorite. He's the best in the world. Besides him, I would love to do an album with Jeff Downs, who's the keyboard player from Asia,
yep.
who's in Yes now.
Yep.
I knew Jeff when I was living in England and did some work with him. And I like Jeff's style. I think what Jeff does is real close to what I do. And boy, drummers, John Bonham from Led Zeppelin, who's gone,
mm-hmm.
has always been my favorite. I mean, there's just nobody better when laying down that groove, even though it's rocking, it's got a lot of soul to it at the same time. Yeah, I mean, if that's a fantasy band, you know, you could put all those guys in the same band for me.
Yeah.
You mentioned Lou Graham. I love the way Lou sings, but I love singing my own album, so I'm going to have to keep him out of my band.
Well, here's what Keith told me. He says maybe John Cage. He likes a lot of the guys from the jazz era yeah. like Coltrane, Miles Davis. Those
that's
are the guys.
Been a favorite of his.
Yeah, that's who he mentioned.
Yeah, Keith really was into jazz. He could play that stuff. Oh my God! I remember we were on tour and we were playing San Antonio, Texas, and we went on the Riverwalk after our concert.
Right.
To all about this little jazz band in there. They had a string bass, a piano, and a drum set with a little cocktail jazz. And Keith said, let's go sit in. I said, okay, cool. So we went in there and asked if we could sit in. And I had played string bass in college, but I hadn't played it since. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? The string bass takes a different set of calluses because
right.
it's so big and the strings are they're smooth. And we jammed for a while, and I ripped the calluses off my fingers.
Holy crap.
I'll never forget it. Man, I was sore after that. But we had so much fun just doing, like, honky tonk train blues and some of the things that we could pull off with a three-piece acoustic little deal, you know. Yeah, Keith was really into that. Although, you know, he had his own style that is just Emerson.
Mm-hmm.
But nobody played like him. Nobody sounded like him.
I agree.
Yeah, it was just amazing. And it's all over the 3.2 album. That's why people are saying, oh my God, I can feel Keith in the music.
Yeah.
Even though he's gone now.
Yeah, he's missed. I mean, when Johnny, I just talked to Paul Nelson. You know, he worked with Johnny Winter and he helped Johnny get back on his feet and everything. And two big losses was Johnny Winter, who's not around anymore for rock and roll and blues,
yeah.
and Keith Emerson for, you know, especially for prog rock. You know, I mean,
yeah.
it's just, you know, it's not the same anymore. It really isn't without those guys.
That same year, we lost Greg Lake, too.
So I know.
The only person left from ELP is Carl Palmer.
Yeah, I feel sorry for Carl, you know. He's,
yeah.
well, you know. Have you done anything with Carl?
Not since we did the first three albums.
Okay.
I did more with Keith. Carl and I would talk, and I always said he came through town. But, yeah, we just never really connected on doing another album. Like I said, I was the voice of three and half the songwriter. Keith was the sound of three and half the songwriter.
Mm-hmm.
And that was what I considered the sound of the album and a sound that I helped create, but I liked also, you know. So it was more important to me to get together with Keith. And Keith and Carl didn't really see eye to eye all the time. You know,
yeah.
like long lost family. something when I talked to Keith about doing something that we thought about using Carl. At that time, we were thinking about using Simon Phillips. Once we got the keyboards and the voice done,
mm-hmm.
and we were going to add Simon to it afterwards. Simon had done an ELP trivia for me that way. And having the music done already seemed to really free him up to do his best work. What he did for me on Club Evil 9 was just stunning. It was amazing. So that was our plan, because we never got that far.
Yeah. Do you know Billy Sherwood?
I don't know Billy Sherwood. Of course, yeah. I know who he is. And he did a lot with the Magna Carta label early on, too. But yeah. I don't know Billy personally.
He's another good guy. Does a lot of, puts together a lot of guys and does a lot of, tribute albums and things like that as well. And, of course, he's in Yes. Yep. And he's like you with, you know, you're keeping Keith's memory alive. He's doing the same with Chris Squire, you know.
That's right. Yeah. That's some big shoes to fill.
Yes, it is. So what's next for Robert Barry?
You know, right now, they're putting together some kind of tour for me next year to go out and play my 30 years of prog
good.
Music.
Good.
I'm planning on doing that. There's a new Alliance album that's almost done. And that's my band with Gary Peel and David Lowsaby. That's not December People. But we do that, too, for Europe and Japan, mainly.
Right.
And we're just working away on that. And, of course, 3.2. I've done over 100 interviews now. Not as many as great and energetic as you are, I got to say.
Thank you.
You have a great vibe about you, man. You sound excited. You kind of get a lot of energy. I told you this morning I did one where I thought I had to wake the girl up. And usually, mostly male guys, when I do an interview with a female, they're usually really on it because they have all these different
exactly.
kind of questions about lyrics and stuff, you know?
Yeah.
I've only had two like that I don't think listened to the album. And really, I had to sort of guide the whole thing. I don't like that. I like to do what you've done. You and I are having a conversation.
Sure.
And I don't even think this is an interview. We're just talking.
Exactly.
And I could talk to you always. You just have so much excitement about things, and you know what you're talking about. Plus, you're embedded in the industry with a lot of different people. It gives us another thing in common, yep. you know.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
So that makes it fun.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It makes it a conversation. And I think I haven't said anything wrong yet, but that's usually when I say something, I shouldn't have said that. You know? Well, like I said, you know, Keith and Carl would fight or something, you know, they get along like a family at a funeral or something. You know, I should have said that. That didn't quite sound right. But, you know, that's what happens sometimes to people. They're that way with Greg Lake.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, that's how I wound up working with him in the first place. They were so mad at Greg.
Yeah.
It happened. But when you have a conversation, those things come out. You can't help it.
I don't know if it was Keith that said something did come out. I think he said something about Greg's like that fat bastard or something like that. But, but you know, he was just kidding around. You know, I mean, they're like brothers, you know.
You know, I can remember being on a tour with three. And one of the DJs at a Richard station we were at said, "Oh, so what's Greg Lake doing?" And Keith said, "I don't know. Last time I saw him, they were swabbing out the Jersey Tunnel with him."
Yeah. Jeez.
And, oh, my God. I went, "Holy smoke, did he just say that?"
That's funny.
But then again, when Greg started, he was really mad at Greg. You know, they were supposed to do another ELP album.
True.
And Greg didn't have any songs.
Yeah.
But he wouldn't do anybody else's songs.
Yeah.
So he said, "I'm done. That's it. I'm finished with this. This is ridiculous."
Yeah.
Because Keith had songs, but Greg was kind of a control freak on the things, you know, as far as Keith was concerned. But Greg was the guy that wrote the hit songs.
Exactly.
He had the talent and
yeah.
great voice, and oh my God, you know, and everybody had their part.
Yeah, I was a big Greg Lake fan. I really was. You know, loved his guitar playing, his acoustic guitar playing, his voice.
Yeah.
You know, he's a great guy.
You, right now, a package just came in. You heard me just open something here, probably. That is the test pressings for the vinyl of 3.2, the new album.
Oh, cool.
And I'm so happy to get these now. They're going to come out first of the year.
Right.
I have, if you know ELP very well, the Brain Salad Surgery album had a cover done by Geiger.
Yep, really cool.
And, well, I have I'm looking at it right now, it's about 2.5 by 3 foot print that
Oh, wow.
And this guy, huge, famous artist and director, right?
Yep.
Didn't he do alien movies or something with alien? I'm going to auction this off, not auction, because it's not going to cost anything, but I have a contest on my website. I'll say at robertberry.com. This isn't a sales pitch because it's not going up yet, but this thing's going to be available for someone to win in January so I can go ahead. And here's another package. Look at this. This is my lucky day. so I can auction that off for people to have a chance to win that thing. And it's probably worth thousands of dollars. He hand signed it. So.
Well, I like to have that.
Well, you're going to have to enter the contest.
I will. I will enter the contest. Robert, thank you, man, for being on the show today. I really, really appreciate it. Thank you for all you do with the charities and with December People. You know, I really hope to see you guys come to Florida because I'd like to meet you in person.
I have a friend there, Ed Morgan, who's a Emerson nut.
Right.
In Florida, and I can't remember what part of it. If we don't come to Florida, I probably won't live another year. So you'll be seeing me, and when we get there, I want to make sure we meet in person. I want to shake your hand and thank you. And I tell you that your energy has been so good.
Thank you, thank you.
And make it fun for me. And I got up at 7:30 this morning to talk to somebody. Well, I won't mention where, but I told you already it was really, really a dry interview.
Yep.
And I had to get up at 7:30 to do it. I'm like, really?
don't they drink coffee? You know?
Well, I don't know what was going on there, but it was I shouldn't complain about it. I'm just glad that they cared enough to give me the time and care about the Keith's last work.
Yep.
Is important.
It is important.
But, you know, it is nice when there was no conversation. There was 8 questions and I could have done an email interview. And it would have been exactly the same, and that's
kind of sad. Well, like I said, it's in my blood just like it's in your blood. You know what I mean? You know, I do play a little guitar as well. I'm a tele man. I love Telecasters.
Well, I have a couple of Telecasters. I have 130 guitars in this studio because I do a lot of sound alikes.
That's crazy.
I have a 1970 Lake Placid and Placid Blue with the white binding Telecaster.
Beautiful.
Original. It could even be a 68. It could even be older. I don't remember now. I have one that's from the 90s that I really love, though, that's a hollow body. It's natural wood.
Yep.
And it's got the F-hole on it when it's hollow. It's really a great guitar. I mean, I love that guitar. And there's another Telecaster here, some kind that's just a standard one, but I have a couple of G&L. I forget what the ASAT, which is like a Telecaster.
Right.
They have the really super hot pickups, like a Telecaster on steroids.
Wow.
So I do love that sound. Of course, I was raised in the country studio, so chicken picking is one of the things that I know how to do, and I love it. You have to have a Telecaster for that.
Sure. I have a...
I know the Stairway to Heaven, right? I think Jimmy Page plays Stairway to Heaven on Telecaster.
That's right. I have a 73. And I had a lot of autographs. I got Johnny Winter, Alvin Lee, John K from Steppenwolf. But they're all kind of fading out now, which is a shame.
Well, you know, you're supposed to spray clear over that.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
Yeah, then in felt pen.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, if the guitar isn't too dirty, you could probably take it to that and put a little clear coat on there. It doesn't have to be very thick.
Most of them are on with a silver like marker, you know.
Is it a black guitar?
No, it's a maroon guitar. As a matter of fact, I had to repaint it. It was brown originally, like a light brown, you know, the Fender brownish, sandy brown color, and I had it because it got all scratched up, and I repainted it.
Well, you better think about sealing those signatures on there.
I need to do that.
Yeah. Even if it's not that clean, you know, see, as long as you don't wipe off the signature, you would clean it a little bit, but if it's just smudged here and there, who cares while the signature's on there? It's what the guitar is, right? You don't get it smudged.
No. As long as it's on there.
Cool.
Yeah. Robert?
I have an Eddie Van Halen Music Man,
right?
Signed by him, I think, in '93 on the wood before they made the guitar.
Oh wow!
Sammy was in Van Halen. Then I said, "Sam, I want one of his guitars." He goes, "Oh, I have to do one special for you." So Yeah, he was signing on the wood before they made the guitar. And I said, will you have him pick it out and everything? I just want one of his guitars, or I'll pay for it. And so Eddie Van Halen picked up the wood, did everything. And I have a beautiful guitar, blonde and signed by Eddie Van Halen, under the finish.
Hmm.
Oh, my God. Greg Kinn's on the phone. Have you talked to Greg Kinn?
Oh, Greg, tell him I said hello, and I'm from Baltimore.
I will. Yeah, no, I'll tell him that for sure.
Robert, thanks again, man. Merry Christmas and Happy New Year.
Same to you, Ray. I've really enjoyed this talk, and I hope to see you soon.
Give John Lappin your email address so I can keep in contact with you if I find, some good stuff about,
I'll tell you what. I have an easy one. You want me to give it to you right now? It'll be right down later.
Okay, go ahead.
My old address is Berry Song, BERRYSONGS at AOL.
Okay, great. Yeah, if I
find kind of my old personal one, I don't give that out. I have a sound check one on Gmail.
Right.
But that one is kind of, I look at it every once in a while just for people that I want to get to me. So
yeah,
I appreciate it, man.
Yeah, as long as you check on that once in a while, I'll.
I do.
I'll update you, and if I can find some information for you about December people, that'll be awesome because you guys deserve it.
Well, let me tell you, if you do that, I'll be forever in your debt because it's been something that I'm not capable of doing because I just don't like the business part, you know?
Yep. Well, I was, besides doing everything I did, I was a banker for 15 years. I did.
You're organized then.
I was good.
Wow. Well, I appreciate it. I really do. Like, I can't thank you enough for at least even thinking about it, you know? That means a lot to me, honestly. The synergy you get from people caring about things.
Right.
Something happens from that. I can't explain it.
I agree. I agree with you 100%.
Yeah.
Thanks, Robert.
All right, man. I'll talk to you soon.
All right, man. Take care.
You too. Bye-bye.
All right, bye. Purchase the latest album from Robert Berry and Keith Emerson, entitled 3.2, The Rules Have Changed, available at Amazon.com. Also, the incredible classic rock Christmas CD collection by December People. People, you have to buy this collection. It is incredible. Sounds Like Christmas, released in 2000. Rattle and Humbug, released in 2001. DP3 was released in 2005. Classic Rock Christmas, 2009. And Saint Nick's Picks was released in 2007. All five of these CDs are available at Amazon.com. You will not regret it. It's the best thing I've heard in a long, long time. Also, for more information about Robert Berry, visit www.robertberry.com or www.facebook.com/Robert Berry Music. Very special thanks to John Lappin of Lappin Enterprises for setting up this interview with Robert Berry, and of course, the dynamic duo of Doug and Don Newsome of VBS Radio for making the magic happen for each and every broadcast of Interviewing the Legends. If you have comments or suggestions for the show, contact me at interviewingthelegends@gmail.com. Please subscribe to my YouTube channel, Interviewing the Legends with Ray Shasho, for the very latest interviews. It's real news, people. And don't forget to purchase a copy of my book entitled Check the G's, The True Story of an Eclectic American Family and Their Wacky Family Business, available now at Amazon.com. There is a movie-like trailer out there on YouTube about the book. Check it out. You will like it. It is really, really, really cool. Have a great week, everybody, and happy holidays.
Thank you, everybody, for listening to Interviewing the Legends. Brought to you by the Publicity Works Agency. Call 941-877-1552 or visit us at publicityworksagency.com. Specializing in author and music artist publicity plans. We shine when we make you shine. Tune in to Interviewing the Legends every Tuesday at 7 p.m. Pacific Time on VBS Radio, Station 1.